the Stratemes, Reb Yehuda Leib Alter, lived in 1847, so we're now entering into the, I guess, you know, getting closer and closer to the contemporary.
Enlightenment.
What?
Enlightenment?
Oh, no, past Enlightenment, but like closer to the modern contemporary rabbis. Still during, I guess, the golden age of Hasidus, which is when Hasidus is flourishing. And before we give his bio, I want to start off with a little bit of a story to help appreciate the Tzvas Emes. It's from the book Lamed Vav, which is a fantastic book on of Rav Shlomo's stories. So, what does it mean to be holy? A lot of people think to be holy means to be out there, to be like up there, you know, away from the people, like doing their own thing, meditating. The Ishbitzer Rebbe says to be holy means to be right there with the people. The mom should be with them at all times. So the greatest tzaddikim of the Jewish people are right there. They use their holiness to be right there with the people. For example, last week, I went to a chidus with a Rebbe. What does that mean? It means I stayed up all night. I got a meeting. And this is a Rebbe. His name is Abiala Rebbe. And he stays up like three nights a week, all night. I don't know when he sleeps. And I had a 4:45 meeting with him.
In the morning.
And I felt after that meeting so re-energized, so like he really got me. It's very hard to explain. But he like, mamish, like, it felt like he could like read my soul. And like I've really been much happier and been in a better place. Gave me some good bracha. I don't want to get details, but I mean, in private I'll share if you want. But so this is Tzvas Emes. So let me tell you a story. At the beginning of the 20th century, Russia and Japan were at war. So, of course, the yeshiva students ended up getting drafted, and that was never good news for the Jews, right? Because the Russians weren't very nice to the Jews, and it wasn't very easy to still maintain your Jewishness, not like the Israeli army, or you're off on Shabbos, or we'll take care of kosher food, nothing, right? So it was like a death sentence. 30,000 Jews were drafted. And when a Yid got drafted, of course, who was the first person he went to when he hit the bad news from me? Went to the Rebbe. So they went to the Rebbe with Yehuda and the Tzvas Emes to get a bracha. And there are many stories of the Ruach HaKodesh, of the divine providence of the Tzvas Emes. Some people, he would go over to them and say, don't try to bribe, save up your money, because it's not going to work. And other people would say, just give a little bit of money and you'll get out of it. He had a chush, he had a feeling for who would make it out and who wouldn't. So, a Yid comes, a very soft-spoken, a sweet Yid comes to the Tzvas Emes, says, Rebbe, I got drafted. Please help me. So the Rebbe takes one good look at him, says, wait here. Goes to his room, and he presents him with a book. Says, read this book. Looked at the book. It's a manual about how to do circumcision, how to be a mohel. Guy's like, what? But Rebbe, I don't want to. The Rebbe says, you might be drafted, but read this book. You'll survive. Brocha batzlocha. The guy's like, no, but Rebbe, I don't want to go to what? He's already up to the next guy in line. Okay. Moves on, gets drafted into the army. And he didn't like the army. And the main reason he didn't like the army was because everything was dirty. Right? The barracks were disgusting. I can tell you, it's still like this. Bathrooms are disgusting. And the people were disgusting. And not only that, all the soldiers didn't do their jobs well. You know, nobody kept their uniforms nicely. It was disgusting. And he was the only soldier that kept everything clean and nice. So one day a general comes in to do a check-in with the officer and see what's going on. He's disgusted. Everything's ridiculously bad. All the soldiers don't know how to stand straight. And he said, tell me, officer, is there even one soldier here that knows what he's doing? And the Rebbe says, and the officer says, well, yeah, there's this one Jew that actually, you know, is very clean and very neat and very orderly. He does what he says, like Forrest Gump. So it wasn't me. I was not the best soldier, but this Jew was a good soldier. Although it was true in my units, usually the religious soldiers were a little bit more like motivated and whatever, but not always. So anyways, so this guy comes over to the, says, all right, I want to meet this Jew, this good soldier. So he brings the Jew into his office. And of course, the Jew's not very excited about it. It was never good news. So he says, I heard you're Jewish. And of course, the Jew's getting a little nervous now. He says, yeah, I'm Jewish. He says, you eat kosher? He says, and he knew, the Jew knew not to lie. He says, yeah, I eat kosher. He says, the general takes a gun and pulls it up in front of his hand and says, you're telling me that when the Russian army is at war and we need to eat in order to serve our country, you're not eating everything in order to be strong to serve our country? And the guy knows that his life is at stake. He perches himself up and suddenly he feels more anger than fear and he says, yeah, I eat kosher. I don't serve the Russian army. I don't serve the Tsar. I serve God first. The guy's general says, you keep Shabbos? And now he takes the gun and points it to his head. He says, yes. He says, you're telling me that when the Russian army is at, you know, is fighting for its life, you're taking a day off when we need you to fight for the Russian army? And the guy knows that his life is online. This might be the last words that he's ever going to live. And he says, yes, I serve the Lord. I don't serve the Tsar. Guy takes the gun to his head. Sorry, I don't know, I'm scared. And he says, and he puts the gun down. And he says, all right, you passed the test. And then, what's going on? Says, I'm a Jew too. Okay, somebody's read enough of Shlomo stories. About, I'm a Jew too. And I worked my way up the Russian army and somehow people forgot the fact that I was Jewish. You know. But the thing is that I just had a son. And I don't know much about religion and stuff. But I need a mohel. I need him to have a brit milah. Gevalt. And the guy says, and I don't know much about Judaism, but I know that the mohel has to keep Shabbos and has to keep the kosher. So I've been looking throughout the Russian army. Yeah.
Why?
Because the mohel has to be religious in order to know how to do it. So I have a lot of other stories about that, but we'll keep them for another time. Anyways, so the guy says, listen, you passed the test. Do you know how to give a bris to a kid? And the guy says, Gavad, I do. And the guy says, wow, if you give my kid a bris, I'm going to draft you. I'll take you onto my squad. I'll let you do the bris, and I'll give you civilian clothing, and I'll let you free. Just do the bris for my kid. And so it was. He did the bris, and he let him go free. And this yid said, jumped up and said, Hodu Lashem Kitov, Gavad. Not only did the Halakha Tzvas Emes have Ruach HaKodesh to save me, he had Ruach HaKodesh to save this Yid. Gevalt. And I have another story like that, but I'll save it for the end about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But anyways, so this is just one story about the Ruach HaKodesh, about the divine spirit that the Halakha Tzvas Emes was zocheh to, the Gur Rebbe. Who was this Tzvas Emes? What's his deal? You with me? Okay. So the Tzvas Emes was the grandson of the Chidushei Harim. He was born in 1847. Okay, in Warsaw. Okay, so kind of just there he is. And he ended up, by the way, he ended up being Gur is the Rebbe of hundreds of thousands. Of at their prime, they had 100,000 Hasidim. So it's not Ger Hasidim. So it's not depends on your pronunciation. But so this is a big deal, okay? To understand who this man is, he was, you know, some people call him the Rebbe of the world. He was like, this is a big.
Why is it called Ger or Ger?
Just different pronunciation. Hasidic pronunciation.
I don't know. What does that come from? The city?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure. No, meaning not the Tzvas Emes, but his grandfather was a great Hasidic Rebbe from Gur Ger, I believe, and he was the grandson of something called Chidushei Arim, who is to this day a very famous Hasidic Rebbe. He had a father and his father died when he was 9 years old. His mother died when he was 2 years old. It's interesting. A lot of the Hasidic rebbes, if you remember, the Baal, were orphans, which maybe means like they made their father and mother was Hashem. They developed a very strong connection with Hashem because they didn't have that earthly. Yeah, it's very prevalent, very fascinating. Anyways, so he had like almost all of the rebbes, but hopefully still inspires us. Extreme hasmada. Hasmada means he would learn 18 hours a day. That was his daily regimen of learning Gemara, Kabbalah. He was a master of everything. To this day, the Sfas Emes is unlike other Hasidic rebbes who are kind of like not too many guys in the Misnagdic world are reading Rabbi Nachman. In the Litvish world, Sfas Emes is also famous because he has a whole commentary on the Gemara, which is very world famous, and he has Hasidic works, which are world famous. His works, I actually have a set. My guys bought him at the end of the year. My guys bought me a set of Sfas Emes, so we'll learn it next week, Bezrat Hashem. So it's like learning Gemara. It's very like yeshiva, like Litvish. It's not like your classical Hasidic paper, and it's very smart, very learned. He was a master of. He's a genius. Master of every Midrash, every Kabbalah, every Gemara.
Eli and I learned some social
work when we were at the Gear. Awesome. How was? It's tough, no?
Crazy.
It's hard.
Oh, guess who's Kevin was on?
Who?
Yassel,
the Holy Miser?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Awesome. Alright, so I hope some of the stuff we learned made it more meaningful.
We were also in the cover of the Rabbah.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Alright, Tov. Let's go. So just a little bit more biographical info. And he was extremely humble. One of my favorite Hasidic stories that they say. When he was a little kid, he did an all-nighter. Steigen, like you guys, right? And then what happened after he did that all-nighter steigen? He took a little schluff. So what happens? His grandfather comes and sees him sleeping and think he missed minyan. So he, in front of the whole base medrash, goes and gives him musr and says, Yehudala, label up. His name is Yehuda Leib. That's why a lot of people name Yehuda Leib. What were you doing sleeping through? And he gave him musr in front of the whole base medrash, and the Sfas Emes was silent. So afterwards they came up to him and said, Rebbe, why didn't you tell your father that you learned all night and you died in Vatican? Why, you know? So he said, I missed the opportunity to hear musr from my grandfather. I wouldn't miss it in a lifetime, God forbid, to get his chutz to hear musr. So you guys can tell that to him. No. The Holy Yid, right? So he was known to have extremely humility. He had no, like, in fact, he's always talking about self-abnegation, nullifying yourself in his works. He was very not into food, didn't eat very much, didn't sleep very much. Like the Gemara says, if you want to be a Talmud Chacham, you have to do a Miyat Shena. So he didn't sleep very much. He got used to that. Ascetic, like almost all the rabbis we've seen, have been not into indulging. And to this day, their rabbis, we'll talk about this more, but they're into not being over into big houses, simple houses, not spending too much money, being frugal, not being too much in the physical things in life.
Although
they do have big tishes, and they did get, and they actually want to make an adar. I have to call them. They want to do something for adar. So, but they're actually the most recent guru rebbe made all these decrees that guys shouldn't have too expensive weddings, and not because they don't want to be overindulgent, because that takes you away from spirituality. It's something we talk about a lot.
Have all the guys bring the alcohol they want to do for you.
Something like that. I have to see how everybody feels. Sounds good. Okay, so when he turned 13, of course, what did he do? And then, come on, guys, you should know. We got married. Steve Brandon's listening. Good Hasidic listener. Rabbi Nachman got married at 12. He got married at 13. That was normal at those times. That's when the sexual urges came, and that's when he got. He was mature. Guys, honestly, he was definitely more mature than most of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I've been married and divorced 4 times.
All right, get lost.
Married 4 divorced.
All right. So at age 19, he, at age 19, Natan, you're on top of it? Yeah. And even if you could text Moshe or whatever, that would be great. Or Max, one of you guys. Seder, I'll take care of the soup, you take care of the rest. Seder? Okay. Okay, let's just finish up. So, fine. He, when his grandfather died at age 19, he was appointed Av Beis Din at age 19, imagine that. The whole city, he was the biggest rabbi. Again, tremendous scholar. They wanted him to be the Rebbe. He refused. Thousands of Hasidim thronged and forced him to be the Rebbe. And in Shavuos, he refused to give Torah, but he said, fine. And on Sukkot, he started sharing Torahs. And the Torahs he was teaching were out of this world. And they eventually wrote them down, and that's what is the Sfat Emet. The reason it's called the Sfat Emet is because the last words that left his mouth were this pasuk called Sfat Emet, the words of truth, which leave my mouth. And that was what he stood for, speaking words of truth.
During his life, he wasn't confident.
Now, interestingly, his grandfather took him to see the Kotzker Rebbe, who was the last rabbi we learned about. So there's some sort of connection. He's also into truth. Okay? Like I said, extremely humble. What was daily life like with the Sfat Emet? So, first of all, he would nonstop learning and davening. He would have his chassidim come in for an hour and a half a day from 9:30 to 11. Even when he was giving them advice, he would always be holding the Shulchan Aruch. And he said, when I give you advice, I should always have the Shulchan Aruch in my hand because he wanted to always be connected to the Shulchan Aruch and knowing it's flowing through the words of Torah. He, in Gur, they daven fast, but he himself would daven in a little private room. He wouldn't daven with the Tibor except Shabbos, and he would daven with extreme, you know, Islavus. That's what a lot of Hasidic Rebbe's. Not with the Tibor, interestingly. Maybe at the same time the Tibor, but he was totally into it, so he needed his own privacy. He was very, you know, kind of private person.
He was better than the Tibor.
No, but not better, but. There's a way. This is a Hasidic idea that you want to get connected to Dveikus. It's hard to do it in a public, showy type of way. And to this day, there are Hasidic rabbis that do. They're with the Tzibur, but they're not always with the Tzibur. They're different drachim. Okay. What else? And again, and people throughout his life would come for blessings and advice and help, stuff like that. The time that he's most famous for in his life was, as I mentioned, this time of war. It was a very hard time period when the Jews were being drafted into war. There was poverty. The Russians weren't very nice. And that is actually what broke the Sfat Emet's heart. And when he saw, first of all, to end the war, the conditions were so bad, this story is told that he got the whole town to say Tehillim and Davin when things were getting horrible. And then finally they were saying Tehillim and Shul. He said, okay, we could stop. And the next day the war ended. So it's attributed to him that he somehow ended this war. But when he saw all the brokenness of the Yidden, his heart was broken. He contracted a very rare disease, which ultimately ended up taking his life. And he died in 1905. Okay? So that's a brief, very brief story about his life. His students were famous for their dedication to their Rebbe and their dedication to the Torah, even in the hardest times. For example, there were Hasidim in Ager Hasidim who, in the trenches, you heard of Trench World 4 and World War 1, they would find a way to make a sukkah in the trenches. Or they weren't able to blow the shofar, so they would instead learn the inyan of what a shofar represents during these World War I's. And they write these letters to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe would write back to them. He really took care of both the spiritual and physical needs of his Hasidim, and that's what Gur Hasidus to this day is famous for their intense care about every Yid. For example, maybe we'll get more into this next time, but the great I was reading Rebbe stories. The great grandson of the or great great grandson of the Sfas Emes, he is also a big Hasidic Rebbe. I think his name is Beis Avram. And he was once in his sukkah, and there was a cold wind that burst forth. And the Hasidim asked, They see everything as a shkacha pratis. They said, why is there a cold wind, Rabbi? What's happening? He says, it must be that we don't care enough about the soldiers in Lebanon up north who are cold and fighting for us, and we're not davening enough for them. Right? So there's a love for every Jew. There's a love for Eretz Yisrael. The Sfas Emes was famous for talking about how much he loved Eretz Yisrael, even though they were living in Poland. He says, and I quote, just as Jews need Eretz Yisrael needs the Jews to bring out its intrinsic holiness. Eretz Yisrael becomes holy through Jews. The bond between the land and the people has not been broken despite the fact that the Jews have been driven from their soil. So the bond between the Jewish people and Eretz Yisrael is always there. He's a believer in Eretz Yisrael. He never thought that mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is expired. I wouldn't call him a Zionist. In fact, it was before, almost all the Hasidim were not Zionists. Herzl actually wrote to him and tried to convince everyone to leave Europe and go to make Aliyah, but he never wrote back. He wasn't anti necessarily, but that wasn't what Herzl was secular, but it's fascinating that they had some sort of correspondence. He was known as one of the Rebbes. And what can I say? He was known to be davening for everyone. And the Avnei Nezer, another famous Rebbe, I'll just close with this, and then we'll ask if everyone could like maybe think of one practical thing we could take upon ourselves for this week. Asked why it was that God gave him such a rare disease to take his life. So the Gemara says that if a person davens for somebody else, he himself is heard first. The Sfas Emes is constantly davening for other people. So if he would have gotten a regular disease, Hashem would have had to hear his prayer, because he was always davening for them at those diseases. So Hashem had to think of a weird disease that he never davened for in order to take his life. So I wouldn't take it necessarily so literally, but the idea is that the Sfas Emes was not just a steiger, not just a davener. He was someone who sincerely cared about every Jew, their spiritual needs, their physical needs, and maybe that's why his brilliant Torahs have been, if not the number one, it's definitely top three Hasidic works to this day studied. Maybe Nachma and Netiva Shalom and Sfas Emes, I'd say, are probably the top three out there. And next week, Bezrat Hashem, I'm excited to actually see it inside some of his teachings, some highlights. Wait, hold on, before we leave, we just need.